I'm ready to go.
Perfect. All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Goldman Sachs Communacopia and Technology Conference. My name is Jim Schneider. I'm a telecom analyst here at Goldman Sachs. It's my pleasure to welcome DIRECTV and Chief Marketing Officer Vince Torres. Thanks, Vince, for being here.
Good morning. No, thank you for having me.
Maybe just kind of start off with, I think, what's topical on everyone's mind right now, which is your CFO held a conference call to discuss the blackout with Disney. He made, you know, quite a number of cogent points, I think, about the industry and how the business is evolving. For those of us who couldn't listen, give us a brief overview of what was said and where you sort of stand on this issue.
Sure, sure. Well, first of all, good morning, everyone. And again, I do appreciate the attendance here. If I were to kind of reflect here on what Ray Carpenter, our CFO, kind of shared earlier this week, is there were probably three elements to it. One is, if we think about the industry of pay TV and the trends there, for some time, we have seen declining demand for the traditional pay TV offerings that are in the market. That declining demand has resulted in fewer subscribers. If we think about the root cause of what that decline is, it's the increasing costs that distributors of pay TV services have been saddled with. That's caused prices to rise for consumers. And as those prices have risen for consumers, demand for the products across services have gone down. And so the fundamental challenge there is, how do we work to control those costs that are driving the prices up and causing demand to fall? In terms of what Ray was trying to communicate is there is a path. Today, consumers are stuck. They're stuck with this world of where you're living with very bloated bundles of content where there's an obligation to carry channels, Jim, and there's an obligation to kind of load them up and force customers to take content and channels that they don't watch. And that's causing the prices to get inflated. We believe that, so the consumers have that option. They also have the option to go and purchase individual VOD services or direct-to-consumer services from various programmers. And every day, that catalog of available services continues to grow. And that's a very fragmented experience where customers have to decide which ones do they pick and choose and how do they assemble it and how do they watch it and how do they navigate what they want to watch and find what they want to watch. That's not an ideal situation. We believe that there's an area in between that would provide customers more options, more choice, more flexibility, would allow us distributors, including DIRECTV, to price services at a more accessible level for consumers, that would expand demand, reverse the trends that we're seeing in the overall traditional pay TV service, and meet customers where they want to be met. They don't want the fragmented experience. They don't want the fully loaded bundles. We believe that there's a place in the middle. Disney plays a key role in this,
yeah.
And that's what we're navigating right now and have been navigating for some time. If you think about their portfolio of offerings, Disney offers content around sports. They offer content around broadcasts and entertainment. They offer content around kids, for kids. About 40% of our customers watch 3+ hours of the sports content a month. Think about that as a game or two on ESPN. About 40% of our customers watch 3 hours plus of that entertainment and broadcasts. Think about a couple shows on ABC. About 10% of our customers watch kids content, as you would expect with the population with young kids. The historical model would have us paying for 80%, distributing this content to 80% of our customers, everybody, whether you watch or not, whether you have any inclination to watch it, and we have to pay for those high percentage of customers that we're forced to distribute it to. That's not a sustainable model. That's not something that is the ruin of that business, and we believe that we're short-sighted right now. The programmers are a bit short-sighted, and Disney's a bit short-sighted in terms of how we can better serve customers together. There is room for both of us profitably, and we got to get back to what customers want and serving them, and that's what we're fighting for.
Yeah, so if you articulated the problem, maybe give us more granularity on the goal you're seeking to achieve.
For us at DIRECTV, we're looking to get more accessible packages of content that are focused on genres. So think of, if you like sports, you can buy a genre of sports content that's not just Disney-centric sports content, but also has the sports content from other programmers, so you can serve your sports needs as a consumer. If you want entertainment content, well, we should be able to package for you entertainment content. If you want both, you should have the choice to buy both or buy one. If you want kids content, you should be able to buy kids content. We should not force upon consumers the need to purchase things that they don't want, and we should not force this model of subsidies, of having one content subsidize other content, and having customers that don't watch subsidize the needs of those that do watch. That's the old model. That's the one size fits all for everybody. This world has evolved, and we need to evolve with it.
Yeah. Maybe put a finer point on it. What is it that you want in the negotiation with Disney that they're unwilling to give you now?
I want the ability to deliver those skinnier bundles associated with genres in a way that does not have us have to pay and have the obligation to pay to distribute that content to subscribers that don't watch it. And so this comes down to not just the creation of these skinnier bundles, but also the avoidance of the subsidy and the tax on the legacy base of subscribers that exist. And that's the game that's been played for a long time, where they may give you some flexibility, but they're still backstopping that flexibility by forcing you to pay for content on the rest of the base and have an obligation to distribute to a certain percentage. So this, they refer to it as minimum pen rates or penetration rates within the base, and we are fighting hard to get to more manageable pen rates that are consistent, more consistent and aligned with the demand that we're seeing for their content.
Yeah.
And so that's a core issue. It's both the flexibility of the content and the avoidance of the obligation to pay for content that folks are not watching.
Got it. Now, Venue, that was a recently announced product that the court enjoined or temporarily blocked, at least. One of your distributor peers was at the forefront of that fight. So how did the offer you got from Disney compare to what is implied in that Venue offering?
Yeah, so this has been a big piece of our negotiation. If you think of Venue is a sports genre offering. For those that are not as familiar with it, it's a joint venture between Disney, Warner Brothers Discovery, and Fox to be able to pull together their sports channels into one service and sell that to consumers that only want that are only looking to scratch that sports itch. That's a genre offering that we believe is good for consumers, that we want to offer consumers. The challenge is, how do I, if those that joint venture goes to market without any other obligation to carry other channels, distribute, incur other costs from that portfolio of channels that Disney has, I want to be able to do the same. I want to be able to deliver that type of product, whether it's exactly that or something, you get the point. It's the genre of sports. How do I serve that to consumers without the obligation to also have to give it to customers that don't want it, to have to pay for customers that don't want it? The joint venture doesn't have that obligation. What makes it anti-competitive is the fact that they're forcing others to do things that they don't have to do, and therefore they have an unfair advantage in the marketplace. And that's the crux of the issue.
Mm-hmm. You know, this time last year, I think around the time of this conference, actually, Charter had a similar blackout with Disney. How are you thinking about differently about this than what Charter maybe was willing to do at the time, given that they have a broadband offering and you don't?
Yeah, no, we actually applaud Charter for what they're, for many of the things that they're doing. We have a different twist on it, as you might expect. If I were to break down what I like and embrace from what Charter has done, is our objective at DIRECTV, and I'll tie it back to Charter, our objective is to truly allow customers to access whatever entertainment they want from whatever service they want seamlessly. How do I aggregate that service? How do I make it easy for you to access what you want, to find what you want, and not have to go switch devices and switch inputs on your devices to do so? That includes providing access to the likes of Disney+ and Hulu and ESPN+, as well as Peacock and many of the other services that are out there for all the different programmers. We embrace that. Part of Charter's deal is to enable that, where they're providing that service directly to many of their customers. The challenge, and some of this has been disclosed at the recent earnings call, you want to ensure that you're not just creating another loaded bundle of SVOD products for consumers. You don't want that obligation or that tax to exist in a different way. So if today you're taxed with having to distribute channels to people that may or may not want it, you don't want to translate that into having to distribute SVODs to people that may or may not want it. My parents don't want Disney+, and so I shouldn't be obligated to give my parents Disney+, for instance. And so that flexibility, and that comes down to the economics of the deal. You heard Charter in their earnings call say that, you know, they are distributing the SVOD services from Disney. I believe it's somewhere north of 70-80% of their customers, but only 10% of their customers have actually taken advantage of that offer. That's not a sustainable dynamic. The economics will play a role in there, but that is just another subsidy model, right?
Yeah.
That it's a new version of a bundle that and so we're looking for. We like the access. We like the ability to provide customers seamless access, discovery of whatever content, whether it's a channel or an SVOD. But we don't like the creation of a new loaded bundle through a different lens. And so that's what we're trying. Our angle is to give customers the access, but also ensure that there's a fair distribution of that content so they can pick and choose. Those that want it can get it. Those that don't should not be obligated to pay for it.
Yeah. And then Charter, I believe this morning, announced the renewal of its Warner Brothers Discovery relationship a little bit early. Maybe just, you know, does that give you any kind of like hint about like where things may be going or what might be possible?
Yeah, I think, again, I think this idea, and I don't know all the details. I saw that I read the announcement, and I'm sure we'll learn more as the day moves on here. But it is a continuation of providing customers with access. If I believe it's the ad-supported versions of Max as well as Discovery Plus. Again, we've been selling those services, and we've worked very well with Warner Brothers Discovery in the past and have done some innovative things with them. So I'm confident that we'll be able to do something similar. But I support the model that Charter is doing to provide access to them. For them, and just to touch on something that I didn't touch on, they do have a broadband business. They do have a mobility business. There may be other ways where they can go out and potentially monetize these rights across those other services for their customers. We look at it as a video provider. We look at it as an optimal video experience for consumers and making sure that there's a fair trade between for our consumers and a great experience. And so I am looking at it a little differently. Flexibility is more important to me than it is to them, because I think that's what from the video lens of consumers, that's what our research suggests that customers want, and that's what I want to be able to deliver.
Yeah. And what is Disney offering you today for new packages, and how does that compare to what you're sort of getting from other programmers when those deals are up for renegotiation?
Yeah, make no mistake about it, Disney is the biggest gorilla in the zoo here. And so they are, the discussions have centered, if I would say, there's two, maybe there's a late emerging third issue that, without getting into too much detail on the deal discussions. But what I would say is, on the total, you have to look at these deals from a total, a holistic perspective. From an economics perspective, finding the right economics for us, while you always want better economics, that is not the biggest impediment. Finding the right combination of pack of genre services that we can deliver to our customers, that is where there is tension, in terms of, you know, which one of their channels should be included in those services, what obligations we have, what obligations exist beyond the new services that we'd introduce to our customers, to what I'll call their backstop on economics, so that they don't see a dwindling of their offering. That is a core part of the negotiation, and there's a legal component also that's a late and emerging, that was the basis for a complaint we filed with the SEC. But those are the three pillars. The deal, again, our priority is finding a fair deal for our customers. We hate the fact that customers, Disney has found that we've carried Disney for 30 years. We've done the business with this company. We found a way to negotiate a deal with them every single time. There is an expectation that Disney will be part of our service and a big part of our service going forward. That's always been our expectation. The fact that our customers are caught in the middle of a negotiation as a tactic by them to put pressure is not a good outcome. And so we need to find a path to solve this. I'm confident we will. But the three areas right now are the number of genre packages, genre-oriented services that I can offer customers going forward. I think we're there or very close to there on general economics. That is not. We've offered to pay fair value for their services, so I don't think that's an impediment. It's more about the flexibility and the legal obligations associated with the deal.
Yeah. I'll get to the legal part in a second, but maybe just tactically for investors, you know, what's been the impact on video subscribers since the blackout went into effect? You know, with that, I think you're also offering a $30 credit during the blackout. So what's been the overall financial impact, and is there a way for investors to think about either the daily, weekly, or monthly sort of ratable impact on your financials, depending on how long it lasts?
Yeah, so the way we look at it is, and I'll break it down maybe not from a daily, monthly, or perspective, but more as a short-term, kind of long-term perspective. In the short term here, yes, we are offering a very rich credit to customers that are impacted by this. And that may never be enough for someone that's annoyed that they can't watch your college football game on Saturday, and we understand that. But the way we fund that is by not paying Disney when we're in a dispute. And so the content savings that we get, we're passing that back to those customers that watch this content and are impacted by the loss of this content. Not every customer, as I mentioned, is impacted by the loss because they don't engage. Not every customer engages with all the content, but there is quite a few. And so that's how, in the short term, the trade kind of pays off in terms of you save on content costs, but you pay it back to consumers in terms of giving them forgiveness on their bill. That's a short-term view. Over the long term, the bet is, yes, customers are annoyed, and with that annoyance comes churn, customer churn. And so we have seen customer defections. I won't get into absolutes. Charter reported some of that when they were going through their dispute. I would say it's not an immaterial amount of customers, because anytime you have something like this, the annoyance factor is very high, and I understand it as both a consumer and an executive at the company. So don't get me wrong. The annoyance factor is there, and we're trying to minimize it. Over the long term, the choice and flexibility that we're fighting for to negotiate, I think, opens the market up much more significantly. If we did this deal and we were just stuck with the same rights and the same ability, I would say it's a net loss for the company, because we wouldn't have the ability to differentiate an offering in the marketplace to kind of claw back the losses that we're experiencing right now. I fundamentally believe that we're making progress in getting this choice and flexibility, and over the mid and long term, we will be able to claw back these short-term losses in terms of subscribers and grow to a much more great significant degree. So there's a little bit of a trade. Short term, unfortunately, we've lost some subscribers. I do believe with more choice and flexibility, that value proposition will allow us to claw it back and more. But in the near term, the cost of these credits that we're playing are being, you know, paid for by the avoidance of content costs.
Yeah. Okay.
I hope that helps.
Yeah, it did. Now, within your business offering, you still have access to sell Sunday Ticket. I'd sort of assume that the same businesses that subscribe to Sunday Ticket also want access to the rest of the ESPN products. So what's the plan here if those customers can't access Disney's sports content in the near term?
Yeah, this is probably, you know, when we talk about putting customers unnecessarily in the middle of a negotiation as a pure pressure tactic by Disney. Same pressure tactic they used with Dish several years ago, same pressure tactic we saw them use with YouTube, same pressure tactic they used with Charter last year, and now it's with us. This is their playbook, right? Because they know that if they could put the customer in the middle of it, they'll put a significant amount of pressure on the distributor to concede. We believe that what we're fighting for is more fundamental in providing that choice going forward to consumers. Our business customers, these business customers have been, we have a fantastic portfolio of customers that span from bars and restaurants to hoteliers to gyms to private businesses. A lot of them rely. Think of those bars and restaurants. They rely on our service. They value the reliability that we have provided to them for many, many years. And because of Disney, customers in their bars and restaurants have not been able to watch sports. And that is just an unfortunate set of circumstances for those bars and restaurants. I would say that our relationships are, when you do have a business-to-business relationship, this is it's a different understanding. These are business owners. Yes, they have the needs that they have to support their business, but they also understand us, and we understand them. And they know that we've got their back, and we've been through some difficult times with them. COVID was very hard. The COVID years were very hard for these businesses, and we made some significant concessions. So we've had their back. They've got our back. That doesn't solve the customer problem in the near term because the options are more limited in a bars and restaurant setting. We're an inclusive provider and distributor of ESPN Plus in bars and restaurants. And that is a challenge if they don't have access to those services. And so they've had to, in the past, we've worked with them to get alternatives into their bars and restaurants to get antennas for broadcast channels. So that solves, in many cases, access to ABC in many markets, but doesn't solve the college football game on Saturday that are on ESPN.
Yeah. So okay.
There's not a good solution for those business owners. Unfortunately, they're stuck.
Unfortunate. Maybe one last tactical question, then I want to zoom way back out. So more tactically, over the last several days, late breaking news is, you know, over the weekend you filed a bad faith filing with the FCC. Help us understand what that means. And then most recently, you know, just a couple of days ago, Disney appears to have offered an extension to sort of show the presidential debate, but I believe you declined that offer. So maybe talk about why.
Yeah, no, I'll touch on both of those. And so the little context on the FCC complaint, as a broadcaster in this country, broadcasters are obligated by the FCC to make good faith attempts to work with distributors in their negotiations to distribute the content. Comes with the territory of being a broadcaster. There are multiple instances where these negotiations have treaded well outside of what we consider to be good faith discussions. There are a number of issues, but one that I think would resonate with this audience and folks is the legal what I'll put in the terms and conditions that Disney is trying to get as a result of this deal. Specifically limiting DirecTV from protecting itself in future disputes related to what we may believe to be anti-competitive actions. So what are they trying to do? They're trying to really find a contractual obligation where we can't not exert our ability to enforce or litigate or any issues related to anti-competitive actions that we believe they may have in the future. Think about the Fubo litigation that they're in right now. They're trying to avoid that in the future, and they're trying to insert that into it. It's unbelievable. There's no other way to describe it. It's an unbelievable request, but that is one of, just to bring it to life, that's one of the elements that informed the complaint with the FCC, because we don't think it's not only right. I do believe there's a reason antitrust laws exist. It's to prevent those with significant market power to force others to do things that are anti-competitive, and they're trying to wiggle that into the contract, which we don't believe is right.
Mm-hmm. And on the Tuesday debate.
This was a, let me call it what it was. It was a clear public relations ploy by Disney. To make the offer very clear, what Disney offered is to turn on their ABC stations because their moderators were facilitating the debate in their stations for 3 hours. So they wanted to turn it on so that folks could see the debate on ABC. By the way, the debate's available on every news channel on the dial. But they wanted the eyeballs on their broadcast stations for those 3 hours, and then they were going to turn it back off. Could you imagine the confusion for customers to say, okay, I'm turning it on now, and then I'm turning it back off in 3 hours? What we offered to Disney is, we'll do that. We'll turn it on. We'll turn all your services on. Let's keep them on through Saturday football. Let's keep them on as we continue to negotiate. We all know we're going to find a path to this negotiation resolution, so why put the customers through all this pain and disruption? So let's turn everything on. Let's continue to negotiate in good faith and take the customers out of it. They declined to do that. So, yes, they wanted to sell in a very self-serving manner, draw attention and eyeballs to their ABC broadcast for 3 hours, then turn it back off, but not solve the customer problem that they're creating around sports and Saturday football, and we didn't think that was fit right for our customers. We thought it would create confusion. The debate was available for our customers to watch on a number of different channels, so we didn't believe there was a customer need. This was purely a self-serving offer that they used as a PR ploy as part of this negotiation.
Got it. Maybe go back to some broader industry issues for a second and maybe talk a little more along those lines. I mean, I think, you know, you brought it up before, everyone has sort of different sets of priorities here. I mean, Dish seems to be more focused on wireless. It has its, you know, financial issues. Charter's quite focused on broadband, as you rightly point out, as well as wireless. Comcast is focused on broadband and streaming products and other priorities. How do you think the industry broadly comes to a consensus here in terms of the evolution of linear video, and how do you think the MVPDs play into effect here?
As the head of marketing here for the company, you always kind of lead into these opportunities and use your customer as the North Star. What do the customers want? And if we can craft offerings, if we are forcing the customer to do something that's unnatural, that is self-serving just for a company, that's not sustainable. And so I do believe that there's enough information out there of what customers want and what they experience. And there's enough information about the pain and the disruption and the less than optimal experience that the advent of all these services has created. Yes, it's created, for those that don't value a lot of the content, or it's given them some optionality to control their price points, but it's done it at the expense of an experience that is easy. Right, there's a lot of fragmentation. We call it, we joke about it, we call it content rage. You can never find what you want to watch when you want to watch it. You don't know what service is on. You don't know if you subscribe. Now you're subscribing to something. In many cases, you're subscribing to things that you're not watching because you can't manage five, six, seven different subscriptions at a time. We think there's a path to kind of solve that problem for customers, doing it in a way that's based on their needs, their behaviors, and what they want. And we believe that that is profitable to everybody in the industry. It's not just for DIRECTV, it's for the value chain in its entirety. We're missing on a market opportunity right now. And so you see elements of this. You see how Charter is going out there with embedding SVODs. We do believe that's a core part of it. You have to provide access to those services to customers. We do embrace that. We're competitors, but we think that scratches the customer itch. We believe there's more to be done. It's more than just providing access. It's providing fair prices. It's limiting the obligations and the subsidies that are out there. And we believe the industry parties know that's a pain point for customers. We just have to walk away from and be open to try new things. And so while different companies may tackle it, Jim, in different ways, I do believe this concept of flexibility, of skinnier offerings, and providing more choice for customers while limiting the obligation and costs to sustain services that have little value, we think that we're all gonna have to push in that direction. And you're seeing glimpses of that from us, from Charter, from others.
Yeah. Maybe just on your DIRECTV Stream product, maybe compare, like, how this product performs against this competition, like YouTube TV, for example. And can you maybe give us any kind of sense of, you know, how the returns or financials for the traditional DBS business compare against that business?
Yeah. So what I'll tell you, I'll give you a glimpse just into our. We separated. We've been operating as a standalone entity for the last 3 years. There is a lot of benefit to being single-minded, and focused on delivering what we believe is the best way to receive video services in the U.S. Focus on the customer, focus on what they have told us matters to them. That has been our priority for the last 3 years, for sure. In terms of, I wanna make sure that the crux of your question was, you know, how does the different services fit within our satellite versus Stream?
Or more, how does your offering for Stream compare against competitors like YouTube TV? And then maybe just give us a sense of how financially the broadcast and Stream businesses compare.
So financially, very, very strong in terms of we don't believe that you need to have a loss leader in one service. We believe that, and as a result of that, we are profitable across all our services. That's hard. I don't think very many streaming companies out there can say that. We can say that, and we've been profitable for a long time. Now, the challenge, so back to how does it compare to the likes of YouTube and others, we have been saddled. We have a very robust set of programming. We offer more programming than anybody else. We have more deals and more content than anybody else. This fundamental issue that we've discussed today around the ability to kinda provide more choice and lessen the obligations to give everybody content that they may or may not want, and introduce lower price points and lower price offerings, we don't have that today. So as a result, we've made a bet around sports. We have more sports than anybody else. That sports comes at a high cost. So we are doing business right now with a very loyal set of customers on the Stream side that value sports. Unfortunately, that comes at a higher price point than what YouTube is available in the market, for those that don't want regional sports, for instance.
Yeah.
And so our market is much more, our addressable market for that product that we have on the Stream side is much more limited than where YouTube is playing right now because they have a much lower price point. I'm gonna speak to their profitability or how their margins look like there, but I can only speak to ours and what I believe. And so we have a very sustainable business, but it speaks to a much narrower audience. If we can break the mold, you will see that change significantly. We are looking to go address a broader market opportunity at much lower price points that will spark and generate growth for that streaming business.
Yeah.
But the experience, and I will offer this to anybody, if you haven't tested our product, go test it. I love the feedback. I think our product itself is the best aggregation experience in the market for content. It curates content for customers in a personalized way. It's different. That is our objective, is to have the best service. And so I think our product stands the test of time. It all comes down to the price-value equation, and that's what we're fighting for here with Disney.
Excellent. Unfortunately, I think we're out of time, but this is a great discussion. So thanks very much, Vince, for being here.
No, thank you, Jim. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.